Welcome to Faith and Family. I'm your temporary host, and I mean that because this week we're pre-recording with our special guest for July 4th when this will air. And prior to that, we'll have our new host of Faith and Family, Andrew Bates. So we welcome this special guest today. It's Pastor Greg Williamson, Chief Mission Officer of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. And before being called to that vital position, you were in the military for how many years?
Yeah, well, Rod, thanks for having me and letting me share a few thoughts and observations about the armed forces and the specific struggles at times and blessings that come for families who are in the military. If I may address some things with you right away, I just want to say thanks to all of our folks who serve in the armed forces, who sacrifice daily for our civil liberties and for our freedoms. And thanks to moms and dads who loan us their children, their sons and daughters, if not for a career, for a few years. So thanks to you and grandparents and children whose moms and dads are also sometimes deployed for months and years. So thanks to all those who have served.
Amen. Thanks to all that. Mm-hmm. You know, Greg, I don't know if you've sensed this, but I certainly have. More of a turnaround that I think I've felt in my lifetime in like the last couple of decades of a growing, swelling pride in our beloved armed forces. Those brave men and women, as you know, who give so much for their country and for freedoms. And I'm so proud. My oldest granddaughter, she just shipped off in the Navy Sunday. She made me proud. She is going to be training to be a culinary chef in the Navy.
Great.
Isn't that neat?
Yes. Unfortunately, I'm Army.
That's good.
She made the second best choice.
maybe later on we can get you together and you can convert her to when she re-ops to go Army, right?
Oh, I celebrate that. The Navy is great. I had joint assignments in my last two assignments, and great folks in all the armed forces, all the branches, that just bring their own skills and abilities to serve our nation. And so hats off to your granddaughter,
Yes.
Yeah, and hats off to her.
Her parents are just so excited, and, you know, they were telling me about the last words that they heard from her love you, Mom and Dad, and we'll talk to you soon. And then there was a voice, authoritative voice in the background going, enough. Tell them you love them. Goodbye. Come on. And so they were saying, haven't heard anything from
Keep
her. Got her clothes shipped back. And we know she's doing well.
Yeah, there you go.
Now, tell us about your career in the military. I know you had quite an illustrious time that you enjoyed.
Yeah.
Give us the highlights of that.
Sure, be happy to. My last assignment was in South Korea, called the ROK, the Republic of Korea. And I was the United Nations Combined Forces Command and U.S. Forces Command Chaplain. General Thurman had command of all those, and I was his command chaplain. So we had Army, Air Force, and Navy chaplains, and, of course, Korean chaplains that were also on the peninsula. And at the time, it was an interesting place to serve. The South Koreans were great allies. All the armed forces chaplains that worked with me were great team players. And it was a real blessing to work in that environment and a great place for us to really see firsthand how the world is a very volatile, uncertain place. The North Korean folks are an interesting lot, to say the least, as is their leadership. So we were right up, the Koreans and some Americans were right up on what's called a demilitary zone. So they were right across from the North Koreans. So that posed its own interesting environment to serve. Before that, I was at the National Security Agency. I was the what's called the staff chaplain, or the senior staff chaplain. Again, a joint environment with all the chaplains there from the Army, Navy, and Air Force. And again, great American folk who work quietly to secure our freedoms and our liberties, and in an environment that is also very volatile and uncertain and complex. In that world, you may have heard of, at the time this is aired, it'll be a little bit old, but some of those folks now are being interviewed by Congress about some of what they do to protect our liberties.
Wow. They can devote some of that now that it's kind of past tense?
No, not really.
No?
Fortunately. Well, fortunately for us.
And how do you prepare all those contingencies for such a volatile situation?
Right. Well, you need very skilled, highly trained, and highly motivated folks on staff, and also not on staff, but also in leadership positions. So there were a mix of military and civilian folks. We're just a wonderful team of people.
Would I assume correctly, Greg, that from the chaplaincy side, these people are probably under a lot of stress and strain?
Sure, they are. Yeah. They are, because
they're away from home.
Yes. And as I said, they live in oftentimes in an uncertain environment. And so some of the folks that serve in the armed forces have to be ready to leave at very short notice. And others have to prepare through training, where they go away from home, and they're often away for extended periods of time before they deploy overseas into a combat environment or combat zone. So it's a lot of time away from home. So it poses its own unique challenges to those who are married, and even to single service members. There's challenges there that I don't think are, unless you've served in that arena and environment, it's sometimes hard to understand why there's that stress involved, but certainly there is. And of course, they have there's lots of time of intense conflict and intense stress, but also then there's periods of boredom. And so those make for combinations that are pretty tough spiritually, emotionally for folks.
Sure. Now, would the chaplain serving in that theater, if that's the correct word, do the chaplains take care of all the families, not only the military people, but their family that are around? Were a lot of the families over there, or are they back in the States?
No, they're back in the States.
Okay.
And they are served by chaplains and other support folks who are serving on those installations in the United States. And they go get spiritual care and comfort from them and from local pastors that we often teamed with to provide care for these family members. So there's a good system in place should they choose to use it. And the chaplains there, oftentimes when the units that move out take their unit chaplains with them, the other chaplains who are at the installations are often supplemented by guard and reserve chaplains also come in to help. And so they have a pretty heavy workload oftentimes, because you can probably imagine if someone's away for 6 months to a year, a mother or father, you got a single parent now with a couple children, it gets pretty stressful. And then the unknown about my spouse, my father, mother, they're in harm's way.
Right.
So there's that other element there that comes into play too.
Your family, were they deployed over there with you, or they stayed back?
No. God in his wisdom and mercy, my assignments were not of that sort. So I did do at Fort Bragg, North Carolina. We had a number of units that left there. And when I was in Korea, of course, unaccompanied, the unit chaplains and local Missouri Synod pastor were very excellent support for my family.
Oh, great. So you know firsthand what that's like.
Yes.
To be deployed apart from your loved ones.
Yes, I do.
And I imagine it's stressful to just think about them being away from you and not knowing exactly what you're facing. Probably can't share everything that you're going through in your work day and in your career.
Mm-hmm. That's correct. There's this unknown component that makes it even more challenging, unlike some who are gone for a month in a corporate environment where they may be gone overseas for a month to do something and there's a date defined when they're coming back. That often isn't the case for military folks. However, rotation dates are put in place and people deploy and then they come back home. But there's still this uncertainty, not only for the family members, but also for the service member who's away from his or her family. So again, it's a this uncertainty can be stressful.
You know, I grew up in a town, Greg, where it was a massive missile base, Cheyenne, Wyoming.
Yes.
And so grew up around military families. And, you know, the thing that I always noticed was how the kids of my age, they would come in a town for a couple of years and then go somewhere else.
Yes.
And you know, always heard about that, even still stay in touch with some of them, that for a while they thought it was a burden to be moved that that,
yes,
that much. But the kids later on say how enriched their life was.
Yeah, so there's some challenges to that.
Some personality, yeah, maybe, that,
sure,
adapt real well and others,
yes,
that don't.
Yeah, there's challenges for that. I'll speak for my own family. When our children were young, they were pretty adaptable to new environments. Elementary school, they made friends pretty quickly. However, as they get older and begin to form more mature friendships, I'll say, it was a little bit more challenging. And that's been shared by others with me, too, that as children get older, the moving gets a little bit more stressful for them.
The bonds, the boyfriends,
yes,
and the,
exactly,
and the just the normal friends,
sure,
all the support group they develop is tough to leave.
Sure, and they're involved with school in sporting events or other activities that are related to school and whatnot. So now they leave and have to make new friends, kind of earn their spurs in a new environment, so to speak. They get their growing up attitudes pretty quickly, and it's a challenge for them too.
Sure.
You know, for the young people who are children or dependents of military folks.
I bet it's tough on the moms, too, that have to comfort and nurture and help adjustments.
Sure. They're assuming two roles oftentimes, so they become the jack of all trades. They become, you know, the softball coach for their sons and,
yeah,
daughters, and they become the cheerleader coach, and they take their children to catechism and to, you know, youth group meetings, and also then they get involved with the military side, where there's a lot of family support activities that go on, which is a good thing. Those I noticed who stayed connected with their churches and with the military support groups did quite well, actually, while their husbands or wives, mothers, and dads were away.
Would I be fair in presuming that there's some close knitness between military families that share these same rate of change and environment and deal with kind of the same things of being in a military situation?
Yes.
They bond together and support each other,
yes,
quite a bit.
Yes, I think so. That those folks, particularly who have been in for several enlistments or commissioned and been in for a while, who are married, the families begin to grow together and bond together, particularly, as I said, those who choose to stay engaged. That's probably not as dynamic as it was 30 years ago. There are more and more working spouses. You know, husbands and wives are both pursuing careers. Some of them are dual military, which is, again, both being in the military, that's another unique challenge to service members. Oh, yeah.
Is that becoming more and more prevalent? Do you know? Do you have any idea?
My observations are yes, but statistically I can't answer that question as precisely as I probably should be able to. But
yeah,
my observations are there are more of them.
More of those.
Yes.
Wow.
And, of course, when they have children and people deploy, that's a real challenge. And children oftentimes have to live with grandparents or aunts and uncles or some other relative, usually.
Sure. Now, I'm sure there's, you know, inherited traits and developed traits that would, bless a military family in keeping, you know, cohesive and keeping communication going and all that with all the distance and events that really unfold upon a military family. What are some of the ones that are important from your experience, both personally and professionally?
So if I understand, what kind of communications are important?
Yeah, or skills. What kind of skills or traits?
Family skills. Okay,
yeah.
So
yeah.
I think...
I didn't say it real well, so thanks for...
So I think that the folks who have established a good communications capability... I'm using military terms, forgive me. But they have developed a good, healthy way of talking with one another about problems. Usually the families that have little problems, or should I say, folks who express having few problems, do not share problems with one another. Those families that are able to frankly discuss problems or concerns or those situations in life that are a little bit unsavory, who have frank discussions about that, who are then able to problem solve through that. Those who have foundations in faith in particular seem to be able to address those quite well. Not without problem, mind you, but they seem to have a better handle on that problem solving in a family.
So, and that would seem to go back to just whether a person is that prone to internalize their problems versus turn to somebody and want to problem solve together, want to get it out in the open and at least make a person aware of why you might be a little on edge at the time, rather than have the other person kind of guess why you're acting differently.
In the military, and I think I can speak for all the services here, there's a sense that those who isolate and remain by themselves are more likely to have some problems. Those who seek counsel from pastors or from senior leaders, non-commissioned officers, petty officers, and so on, they, I think, are able to better address problems early on and work through them. They find mentors who are skilled and have experience with problems and oftentimes have lived through the same problem. Service members who are young are reluctant to share this.
They're unusual,
yes,
right?
Yes, of course.
Yeah.
Nobody else
nobody
knows
else has
my
ever
troubles.
Had to go
That's
through
right.
this.
Exactly. When, of course, almost everyone has.
Yeah. So the proverbial, I might be embarrassed to have to share something
right.
Frankly and openly with you because
right.
you might think I'm weird, but a lot of times you're saying the person has already been there, done that.
Of course. The classic example, I'll share a specific one from my time as a basic training chaplain. Almost 27 years ago, now 28 years ago, the number of young men at the time, it was all men in my unit, would come and talk to me about their girlfriends or breaking up with them and how traumatic it was for them. They came to me as a chaplain, which I found to be a great opportunity to talk to them not only about the specific relationship issue they were having, but about faith in their lives and also how they could work through that. The numbers, though, were legion who had these experiences. And, of course, the drill sergeants, the older men in the unit, had all had several girlfriends. Many were married now, but as you and I know, we've had several girlfriends in our lives before we find our beloved spouses. And that they were going through that. Some of them, it was the first time, so it was real traumatic.
The old, still a lot of fish out there in the sea.
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah, that's good. That's good. Well, you know, I wanted to touch on, too, what family, friends, and brothers and sisters in Christ can reach out and be a benefit and blessing to our military families. Because I know on this day, there's a lot of proud Americans.
Sure there are.
Just more and more of them. You see the flags out.
Sure.
And they're talking. And with all the fun stuff that we do on the 4th, you know, that's what I love about our country is, our hearts and our minds
sure.
are with the ones that are out there deployed or away from family and friends and just serving us so admirably.
Right.
So what can all of those do to be of service and be a blessing, be of support to our military families?
Well, the first is keep them in your prayers. I often found comfort in knowing that where churches would send me letters saying, Pastor Williamson, we prayed for you today in church, and they would send me that. And it was a real blessing to know that I had so many people, my family, but churches and others who kept me in, and people I didn't even know who kept me in their prayers over the years I was in the armed forces. Also, to be good listeners. There's a sense where when a service member returns from a deployment and is back in their home church or they've been through some difficult times, people don't know what to say. And that's okay. Be a good listener when the time comes. It's okay not to know what questions to ask. You don't need to ask them. So I would encourage good listening. And then also to take it upon yourself to encourage that service member who's returning, either with a handshake or thanks for your service, or to just say, hey, if you ever want to have a cup of coffee, I'm here, it's on me. So those sorts of things to develop relationships, particularly in the, from fellow members in the church, are very important, and it takes time. So what I've observed is that young men and women leave, they go in armed forces for 3 years or something, they don't make it a career, but they come back home and they're changed. They're not the same person. And most of the time, it's very positive growth for them. So just to listen, and when they're ready to talk, they'll talk, but that takes trust.
Sure. They're not going to instantly open up and tell you what's on their heart, what's on
right.
their mind, probably. It's going to, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, and that's a good point that you make, that some of them, even in a short period of time, I would assume, can really mature and really change be through some trauma.
Very much.
And be traumatized.
Yes.
And so they're not going to maybe be that same old Sally or Joe that you remember.
That's right. Yeah, so when they come back, there's a change. Anyone matures over time. But like I think that most people mature over time. It took me longer than normal. They do.
Yeah.
In that environment, they tend to grow up quickly.
Yeah.
Particularly depending on what they've been exposed to.
You're almost in that kind of an environment, forced to, or you're not going to cut it. So,
yes.
Yeah. Yeah. I was giving that advice to my granddaughter to make the most of that,
right.
a chance to mature.
Yeah, there's some great benefits to that. You get meet some great people, have great leaders, you learn skills, and as your granddaughter's going to learn, that you can't get anywhere else. And it's not just the skill set, the specific skill set in the Navy, they call that a rate that you're learning. You're learning about people and about relationships and about leading and following.
And being a team player.
And being accountable.
Being accountable. Boy, that's a word that we need today, isn't it?
It is.
To be accountable. And so the military is very good for that, isn't it?
Yes, they are.
Developing all those assets that we're even hearing now how employers, when they come back, see that in these young people coming out of the military service and need those kind of valuable traits that they're self-starters, they're dependable, they're teachable, they're team players. A lot of them are leaders, develop leadership skills.
Yes. And as you said, as you mentioned, Rod, that they also are good team players. They learn to be part of a team, and that team then has an accountability also. So those are things that in the military really do a great job of that development.
We're going to have to take a little break here, but when we come back, you know, I'd like to explore that's some of those great, I don't know if you would call them character traits or real, I would almost think they're assets for the rest of life that the military instills in those people. Does that relate to their ability to be a better family leader, a better family member?
Yes.
Any ideas on that?
Yes, I do. Yes and no. If they're able to take that in a positive way and apply it to the environment as a husband, wife, or father, mother, it has a very positive effect. If they don't shape that to the environment of family, it can be sometimes a bit overwhelming for a family.
I bet. That's not used to any of that at all.
Yes.
Yeah. So it's applying it in a healthy and right way.
Yes. You have children and a spouse who are not Marines.
Yeah. let's leave it there. And let's pick up more on that on the other side, talking about our beloved military families on this blessed July 4th celebration. So we salute you. We thank God for all of you that have served our country so well around the world. Stick with us as we come back here on Faith and Family.
church music does not praise any particular country or nation, but it welcomes the music of all of them. During this 4th of July season in the United States, Sing for Joy features American music. Join us.
Sundays at noon on KFUO, the messenger of good news.
Hi, I'm Mark Hawkinson, extending a warm invitation for you to join me for Moments of Assurance each weekday from noon to 1 p.m. on Worldwide KFUO. Each day I'll share scriptural encouragement along with practical thoughts, humor, trivia, news items, wonderful Christ-centered songs and hymns. It's a great spiritual recipe for your noontime hour. So join me, won't you? That's Moments of Assurance, underwritten in part by Mid-American Coaches and Children's Christian Concern Society, an LCMS-recognized service organization.
Martin Luther once said that the devil, the originator of sorrowful anxieties and restless troubles, flees before the sound of music almost as much as before the Word of God. Music is a gift and grace of God. Here at KFUO, we believe that. That's why we're bringing you great classical music and sacred classics online at classic99.com 24 hours a day. Check us out, classic99.com, a musical ministry of KFUO Radio.
Human trafficking is the third fastest growing criminal industry. It impacts millions of people, including tens of thousands of immigrants, and reaches virtually every corner of the U.S. This trading in the bodies and souls of human beings is clearly condemned in Scripture. The Lutheran Church Missouri Synod and Lutheran Immigration and Refugee Service launched the End Human Trafficking Campaign to help educate and mobilize Lutherans to make a difference. Together we can end human trafficking. LIRS.org/EHT.
Leaders of religious groups representing more than 100 million Americans say the health care law shouldn't force religious institutions and business owners to provide contraceptive coverage that violates their conscience. The open letter to all Americans is signed by leaders of the Roman Catholic Church, the Southern Baptist Convention, the National Association of Evangelicals, the Assemblies of God, and the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, among others. It urges the Department of Health and Human Services to exempt any organization or individual that has religious or moral objections. The Reverend Russell Moore, president of the Southern Baptists Ethics and Religious Liberty Commission, says,
"We have appealed as citizens for the administration to respect conscience rights. In response, our government has given us word games and accounting tricks."
Moore says freedom of conscience should matter to all Americans, especially this week as they prepare to celebrate Independence Day. I'm Steve Coleman.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, Executive Director of Life Issues Institute.
Today is the 4th of July. We're celebrating the 237th birthday of our great nation. I'm a very patriotic person, so I love July 4th. We fondly remember the trials and tribulations of our founding fathers to birth this nation. And we remember all the soldiers who've died or been wounded defending her. The most important right to defend is our right to life, because without it, we'd have no other rights to enjoy. Tens of millions of unborn babies have been legally aborted, never to enjoy their right to life or the many other rights we hold dear. Why does Congress refuse to include all American citizens in today's celebration? We must end the tragedy and injustice of abortion to fully celebrate the freedoms the rest of us enjoy. Please, God, help us.
Life Issues. Stay informed. More informed than you've ever been.
Thanks for sticking with us here on Faith and Family. Welcome back. Your host, Rod Zwanitzer, wishing you all a safe and blessed July 4th celebration, where we turn our hearts towards the amazing freedoms that and independence that we enjoy. And that didn't come for nothing. That came at the blessed sacrifice of so many individuals, and it continues today around the world. Is so proud of our young people and all those of all ages that do the sometimes thankless task of defending us and promoting freedom and peace throughout this country, throughout this globe. And our guest, Pastor Greg Williamson, Chief Mission Officer of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, and quite the background in military chaplaincy, is our guest today. Greg, as we left before the break, we were talking about the application of these wonderful personality traits and characteristics, if you will, that the military shapes in their people, that the transferability of that to their family life.
Yes, they do. They mentor people, as I said. They teach them leadership skills. They teach them about caring, about responsibility and accountability. Those things are needed today in our society, certainly. And the military helps shape and develop that.
And we thank God for those. And they become, as we were talking, such an asset to society and to our economy, to businesses. And so we encourage everybody out there that's considering such to consider a veteran. And we were talking off mic that a lot of families have to deal with situations that aren't real pleasant, that are a result of severe trauma.
They are.
And talk to us about some of that and the military families and chaplains and others that have to help everyone cope with that.
There's something called PTSD, which is post-traumatic stress. And the folks who suffer from that oftentimes go years and years with suffering through these moments and difficult times from being traumatized in combat. The folks who serve them best oftentimes are people of faith, are chaplains, and other healthcare providers who care very much about them. But it's a long process at times to get them back to wellness. And they can surface years, these sorts of problems can surface years later in life. Oftentimes the service member copes with his own struggles emotionally and spiritually in unhealthy ways through drug and alcohol abuse at times. And, of course, that's a sad and unhealthy thing to do. However, they do that on their own. Sometimes they're not as well-informed. They don't have the support network there, so they do the best they can with. Of course, they reach some very bad places in life by those sorts of self-therapies.
Sure. And those are never, getting at the root of it. They're just covering it over, not really addressing the issues at all, just allowing them to supposedly cope. And we all know that's no real remedy at all, even short term.
That's very well said. They tend to treat symptoms and not the problem.
Sure.
That's something that we all do as Christians, too, is we treat symptoms and not seeking out the real problem and sorting those things through. It relates to something I said in the first segment, where those families that cope well tend to be able to problem solve together, whether it's a spiritual problem, a real sin issue in their lives or in their relationship, or whether it's something that's something about finances or other more mundane activities, engagements of life that families have day to day. These service members who suffer from PTSD, yeah, or now they have also traumatic brain injury or mild traumatic brain injury, suffer from these wounds that are oftentimes unseen by us. It's not like losing a leg or an arm. They have these problems, and unless someone takes time to listen, as I, again, talking about how people can help earlier, just to listen to that and then get them with the right pastor or other health provider who can bring them along in the healing process, is takes some time and patience.
I was going to ask that. So if one is a family member, a friend, or, you know, in a congregation with one of these individuals that suffers from that stress, that syndrome, that'd be the best way to try to say, let me help you try to get you some professional help that can help you walk through this and get on the other side.
For our pastors, it becomes critical that they have a trained eye to see some of those symptoms that surface in the congregation when someone returns. And that takes time. It's Sunday morning in church, you probably won't see it. But other times in home visits and in conversations, as you get to know your parishioners, you'll see those sorts of things. So for pastors to know how they can help their parishioners is a very good thing. But they also need to understand or to identify, rather, those symptoms that may be indicators of something else going on in the service member's life.
And you were saying, Greg, that sometimes these flare-ups don't happen right away when they return. It could be down the road sometime.
That's right.
Kind of almost like a hidden thing that stressors, certain situations cause it to come out in the open.
Yes, that's exactly correct. That a service member may be severely traumatized from something that happened and choose not to talk about that for years, and then it surfaces again. So when someone comes back home and they're back for a few days, there may be acute responses immediately. If, for instance, if there's a family issue and the service member comes home, whether husband or wife, there's usually something acute that may occur at that moment. However, the things to which I referred earlier usually take time to surface. They're not always immediately observed.
Wow, I wasn't aware of that. So that's the amazing thing, is you've got to kind of be on your alert if you're around them after a while. Is there any trending there on any one symptom that you could share with the people they might look out for over time?
Well, someone who normally does not isolate, and they tend to now isolate from others, is one indicator.
So they might have been an outgoing person.
That's
all
right.
Of a sudden you see them kind of back away from things.
Sure. If they start to isolate like that, which is, if they're normally that way, that's one thing. But if it's a change in their behavior, if they at one time were a very modest drinker, like of a beer or two, and now they're a heavy drinker, those sorts of things are possible indicators that there might be something else going on.
Or if they were before a fairly easygoing,
right,
cheerful person, and now they are having problems getting along with almost everybody, that would be maybe a symptom.
Yes. So those sorts of dramatic changes
it from the normal.
And that's where a pastor does have an advantage, because the pastor may have known some of these folks for years and years and years, and know their family. So when the pastor begins to observe these dramatic changes, if they're in a position of trust, that might be a moment when they're available to hear,
or listen. Yeah, and you talk about really good active listening. Which is hard to do.
Yes,
on a consistent basis. Yeah.
Yeah, preachers like to preach.
Yeah. We like to have the transmit button on rather than the receive.
Yes.
Yeah. So with the good theologically equipped Missouri Synod pastor, would he be able, with patience and listening, be able to help somebody with this? Or would he have to get some training or find somebody that's specifically equipped to deal with this?
Well, the office of the keys is very important in this regard. There's that absolution that comes is very freeing for many men and women. So I would not underestimate what a pastor can bring to the healing of someone who is struggling, spiritually now struggling. So the office of the keys is very critical.
And do I hear you correctly really saying focusing on confession, absolution?
You hear me correctly.
Wow.
That's right.
Yeah, and you know, that's been...
But that takes a lot of trust.
It sure does, and you can't usually get that right away. It's, as you know... meeting together a lot and developing that, isn't it?
Yes, and if I may go on, it always is wise for a pastor who is not daily involved with some very difficult cases to have a trusted counselor to assist them, and that they can refer to someone who is a confessional Lutheran who understands the various trauma problems related to the service members. It's always wise to have that person as a resource.
Sure.
So no matter how skilled you are, there's always one more case that is pretty tough. And we pastors sometimes, I'll confess, we want to be able to think we can handle every problem that comes our way. However, to have in your kit bag of help someone that you trust as a pastor, a fellow pastor who's maybe trained in this area,
sure,
that you can refer these folks to with confidence.
Because you certainly don't want to approach it with, I'll get there by trial and error.
Oh, that's
right. You could do great damage, right?
Yeah, yeah, that's correct.
If you don't know what you're doing here.
The gospel is always great. No fear there. There might be some things to work through with someone. It takes time, though. And that's where this, as I said, that's where this skilled subject matter expert in this area can be of great help.
Sure. And I would imagine, too, that for the rest of the immediate family and even friends and associates who have to go through some of this trauma with their loved ones and their family members and their friends that are traumatized from the military experience, that can be difficult on them too.
Yeah, the whole family is affected by this. So they've been, for instance, when a service member's gone for a year and they come back, it's not the same. They've been gone for a year. The family has continued to move on and thrive in their churches and their communities. They need to do that just to thrive. They need to continue on to keep attending worship services, involved with Sunday school, going to school events, playing in sports and other extracurricular activities. These things you want your family to do when you're gone. The family adapts to life without mom or dad. So when the mom or dad come back, there's a little bit of an adjustment that goes on with integration back into the family.
And again, running full steam in that direction,
right.
And this person's coming in and got their own agenda.
That's right. And that is not an easy process either. And that takes time.
Yeah, that for that readjustment to happen on both sides of the of that.
Exactly.
And I imagine that's one of the first things that has to be said and then understood is it's going to take time.
It does. It's going to take time and patience and all. Of course, children are children. But for the two adults, mom and dad involved, husband and wife, it takes time. They both need to understand that they've moved on in separate ways for a year. Now they're back together. How do we reintegrate? And the best place to start is in faith life with our time together as we hear the Word of God preached, as we receive the sacrament, as we recall our baptisms, how we're called to life in Christ, and that we are children of God. And although our professions have caused this separation, it's not an eternal separation, and now it's a temporal one, and that the problems that we experience even when we reintegrate are temporal. So thinking in those terms, that we are people of God, children of God, rescued from sin by our Lord Jesus Christ, to keep that in mind and to treat one another with patience and respect during this time of kind of trial and error as you come back together is very important.
Yeah, and it's difficult, but I like what you say as a redeemed, baptized, and sanctified Christian believer in Jesus Christ. Keep that in your forefront of your saying, I've got to give this person who's coming out of the military, and it's got to be a shock for them. I got to give them some space. I got to give them some time. I got to give them some love.
Yeah, and on the other side of the equation, a word to my military folks, give your families time also.
Sure.
When you come back, you were dad, you were doing all these things, but mom has been taking that role up, or dad has, depending on who deployed. But don't forget that side of the equation, too, to be patient with your spouse and children as they reintegrate
great.
With you.
Yes, that well said. Are you ready to move on to another topic?
Sure.
Here's one I'd like your comments on. If a family out there today has been or is just starting to contemplate one of their young ones of entering into the military service,
yes,
what would you advise those families to talk about honestly and openly with each other?
Well, I would first say that serving in the armed forces is a noble and good thing to do.
And can a Christian do it?
Yes.
You know, we're good in Lutherans on vocation.
Yes.
So what do we Lutherans think about people being soldiers and Marines and sailors and Air Force and all that?
Well, I think Luther wrote something called Soldiers Too Can Be Saved.
Isn't that a great document?
It is. Yeah, it is a great document. It was very freeing for me when I read it many, many years ago, 35 years ago or 37 years ago now. Yeah, it's a great document. So for you Lutherans out there, if you're contemplating this.
Get that.
Yeah, Soldiers Too Can Be Saved, Luther.
Yeah.
Dr. Martin Luther.
Yeah, if you can't find it, get a hold of Pastor Williamson or myself, and we'll make sure you find it, because that's a great document.
It is a great document.
So he even says it's a very admirable and God-serving thing to
very
do.
Very noble.
And we can start with that, can't we?
Yeah, we want people of great character serving in the armed forces, particularly those who lead and those who follow both. We want people of great character serving in the armed forces. You're at times given some significant responsibilities, and we would prefer that it be those people of faith and who are not only servants of the kingdom of the left, but also servants of the kingdom of the right.
Yeah, serving their God by serving their country and their fellow human beings around the globe.
Yeah, yeah.
What an admirable thing.
It is a very admirable thing.
Yeah.
And I commend all young people who want to go serve. And if you want to go in the Guard or Reserve or the active components, I encourage it. If you choose to stand for one enlistment, a great thing. Remember, in my lifetime, I was one of the last guys that had to sign up for the draft. There was a time when everybody had to do that. So if you have grandfathers out there, anyone who's listening, you can talk to them about the draft.
I went through that. That was really tense at our time. Sure.
That's right. There were a number of, my father served in World War II. So there was everybody was in the armed forces in that time. Almost gladly, willingly, though. Oh, they served.
Wonderful cause.
They did. They served very willingly.
Yeah. I think that's what's so neat about today, too, that our people feel that, and you hear them talk so wonderfully about how they really are into what they're doing.
They're
not just doing it to get by.
They're
loving what they're doing. They know it has meaning. They know their life has a purpose. Even those that gives limbs, you hear them talk like that.
Yeah.
Very, very inspiring. Yeah.
And that's the other thing. The folks who have lost arms, legs, lost their eyesight, lost hearing. It's amazing they come back and they're still so dedicated to the liberties and freedoms that we have in the Constitution. It's an amazing thing to see and hear them talk. And also, people of faith who come back and talk about their faith and the role that it played in sustaining them and how it had a role in sustaining others with whom they served. So it's a great, great testimony to our Lord Jesus Christ and also a great testimony to the men and women who voluntarily serve.
I would imagine, Greg, that chaplains like yourself that are with us day in, day out for some period of time and see a whole range of things that the rest of us can't even imagine. It's got to be kind of inspirational in a way to see the hand of God sustaining these people. And as you were describing it there, even coming out of that, and I think that's what gets to the rest of us and gets us choked up and proud to be in this great country and to have these people say we're fellow Americans, that, you know, to hear them say, we love doing it.
Of course.
The spread, aren't we? The bell curve of...
Yeah, we do. Yeah. But I would like to assure the folks who are listening that the vast majority serve with great honor.
Yeah. So what would you say to the young person out there that's thinking right now, because I know some of these, that are saying, you know, I really want to serve the Lord as a pastor. What would you say to them about contemplating chaplaincy? Now, I know you don't... First off, start training for that, do you? It's down the road. What would you say to those people that are thinking that?
I would contemplate the following, that it's a life oftentimes where, as we've discussed, you're away from family a lot. So I don't want to paint a picture that is like a parish. It's a very different ministry from the parish. It's one that's pluralistic. So you're working with other chaplains who are from various Christian denominations and from other faiths entirely. They're not Christian. And that's an environment some are very uncomfortable with. Yet that's the reality of our chaplaincy. It is not Christian.
You'd have your eyes open to that before you even thought about getting into it.
Yeah, so you're going to be separated from your family. You're going to be in an environment that is not Christian. You will find great friends in the chaplaincy. You'll make friends who share other Missouri Synod folks will share your confession, and you'll have great discussions at times about sharing our confessions with other Christians who actually are, the more time I spent in the Army, were quite interested oftentimes in hearing what Dr. Luther wrote and reading our confessions. Although they didn't agree with all of them, it was a great starting point of discussion.
Yeah, just to, as you were saying there, expose them to Luther, right?
Yes.
Because a lot of them think they know him, but they probably they don't.
That's true.
So it's this is what Martin was really about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the other thing, it can be very physically demanding. It's still, the military is still a young person's game. Someone, for instance, who would be 50 years old in military would usually be very senior.
Wow. They're,
yeah, so chaplains tend to trend older for obvious reasons. We have requirement to get through our college and seminaries and then serve in the parish. So by the time that happens, a young man is commissioned as a Missouri Synod chaplain in the armed forces. You're already older than your peers. And that, of course, that continues.
That never.
You grow older, but the 19-year-olds stay 19. A new crop comes in. That's right.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, what's the view going the other way in the military of the chaplain from the rank and file military person?
I think, by and large, the chaplains are well respected by the young men and women. I can speak most precisely about the Army. In the Army, chaplains are assigned to units, and so you're integrated in the unit. You're not in a chapel somewhere away from the
isolated
rest. No, you're part of the unit. So your friends oftentimes are other officers or other NCOs, service members. You get to know them very, very well. So as you, the longer you're in that unit, the more trust develops among the service members. And that's key to being a successful chaplain, is knowing that a service member can come to you in absolute confidence and talk about, as I told someone, people usually didn't come to talk to me about how great things were going in their families.
About how great the food or accommodations
were. That's right.
Yeah.
So once that happens, though, and then your advice to your commanding officer and your senior non-commissioned officers or chief petty officers is very valuable. So that's more your integrated unit. So it's a very special place in the armed forces.
Wow, it sounds that way.
Yeah, it's a bridge between you're a guy that bridges between the senior officers and the most junior people.
Yeah. We got about a minute left. What would you like to say to this great country on their day of independence and celebration of that?
Well, I am happy to live in a country that has guaranteed civil liberties and freedoms that a lot of places in this world, simply people do not have that. And when one goes away to other places and sees the oppression and tyranny at times, it is a great place to be. And I'm very proud to have served, and I'm proud to carry an American passport.
And with all of our warts and all of our ills, it's still the greatest place on the earth, isn't it?
Yeah. And most of all, I'm very proud to be a member of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod.
Well, and we're very proud to have you that. Pastor Greg Williamson, thanks for being our guest in Faith and Family. And God go with you and bless you and keep it up, all the great stuff we see and hear of the missions. And thanks for leading us.
Well, thank you for the time with you.
And blessed 4th of July to you.
Thanks.
Thanks for being on Faith and Family.